Connectability Radio presents the DSTO Information Sessions, held May 12, 2008. How to Creatively Use Your Funding, presented by Lucy DePalma.
She's the Director of Support Services at Vita Community Living, and she will start the conversation about that, and we certainly encourage you to ask questions.
Okay. Well, welcome. Thank you very much for coming to the session today. The title of this workshop is a little bit misleading in that I don't want to really talk about ideas under different funding envelopes. What I want to do is talk about creative ideas in an effort to help enrich or help create a better quality of life for someone that you might be supporting. So rather than taking funding sources and looking to see what fits under them, I thought maybe we could do the opposite. So in other words, I really want to focus on creative planning. I assume a few things if you've come to the session today. The first assumption I have is that you do have some kind of funding, whether you have a little bit or you have a lot, you have something. The second assumption I have is that you do have some flexibility with your funding, so that you do have some choices and you can make some choices about where you want to spend your money. And the third thing is that everyone has varying support needs. So depending on them, some ideas that I talk about may make sense, but some may sound like they don't. But I challenge you to ask yourself the question, with enough support, could the individual participate in some of the things that I'm going to talk about? And when you're thinking about support needs, you should ask yourself, what would it take for this individual to be respectfully supported? So take any idea, if you think could be of interest, break it down and figure out how and which parts they could do. What would their contribution be and what would the support look like? For example, if we take baking, if you think about someone who might be interested in doing baking and you think that maybe they couldn't actually do like from steps 1 to 5, ask yourself which part could they do? And the goal is always to try and maximize their roles and responsibilities. What would that support look like for them? And what would they need to know? And recognize that at every moment that it's a possibility for them to participate and for them to belong. So when I started preparing this discussion, I started thinking about how to sort of frame it, in what context I should put it in. And I thought it would really be best discussed in a multidimensional, holistic kind of model. So I started thinking about what would make sense in terms of promoting good quality of life. I thought that, and really quality of life is just a fancy way of saying creating a meaningful and satisfying life. That's all it is. And what I found out was that U of T had started looking at quality of life issues in 1991 because the Ontario Ministry of Community and Social Services had asked them to help develop a model that would help or a sort of an instrument that would help assess quality of life issues for people who have developmental disabilities. And this is what they came up with. In fact, this model is really not just for people with developmental disabilities, it's for anybody, all of us. So I thought that that would be a really good way of sort of guiding our discussion. So the first area that the model looks at is physical. So physical, when we're talking about physical, we're talking about physical health. We're talking about making sure the body is in a good, healthy state. So when we think about this, we might think about any idea that falls in line with promoting good physical health. We all know the merits of good physical exercise and all of its benefits. So ideas in this area might come in the form of getting a gym membership or maybe taking dance classes. I found out there's many different kinds of dance. There's hip-hop, jazz, ballet, line dancing, and cultural dance. Recently, I found out, too, that you can even get a personal trainer that will come to your home. So if you don't feel comfortable going to a gym, if the person you're supporting doesn't feel comfortable going to a gym, you can actually hire a trainer that will come to your home and do your own program. And they have a website. It's www.traineronsite.com. Another thing is sometimes when we think of our children. We don't think, sometimes we think about our adult children, we don't think that they might want to participate in something like martial arts training. I know that martial arts training has always been something we've done for our children, but it's something that actually adults are starting to participate in more and more. There are a lot of benefits with martial arts training, some of which are it improves balance, it improves flexibility, increases stamina, and improves posture. The other thing is it could lead to an increase in self-confidence and self-control, and it can help decrease anger and mood disturbances and decrease in feelings of vulnerability. I think that choosing martial arts as opposed to other sports probably is a better choice, because the focus of martial arts is toward self-control and self-knowledge rather than competition, which other Western sports are usually, that's what the focus is. You might want to consider also Pilates. The focus of Pilates is exercising core, postural, abdominal, and back muscles. But in reality, it doesn't really matter. I think that if you choose any kind of form of exercise that a person might find enjoyable, I think would be a good idea, and it would really help promote good physical health. So another area that the Quality of Life Framework addresses is psychological being. This area looks at thoughts and feelings, the struggles that one might have with self-control and issues of self-concepts. The area looks at freedom from anxiety. This might take the form of going to see a counselor on a regular basis to help explore feelings or thoughts, or work on emotional control issues like anger management. Or if you want to look at other therapies that don't involve a lot of talk, you might want to consider aromatherapy. Aromatherapy, it's been discovered that the sense of smell is actually directly connected with the limbic system, and it's part of the brain that controls emotions. And then there are the arts. There are visual arts, which might include drawing, sketching, painting. And even within basic painting, there's different kinds. There's acrylic, watercolor, traditional oils, pencil, crayon, and pastels. Or you might want to think about beginner calligraphy. There are some other art forms like stained glass or ceramics. Yoga is also something that you may not have considered in the past. Yoga is a combination of exercise and meditation, so it has both physical and psychological benefits. Over the last few years, I discovered a new form of yoga called laughter yoga. It's an exercise that came out of a movement that started in India in 1995. A doctor discovered the physical and psychological benefits enjoyed by his patients who had taken to heart his prescription for laughter. Dr. Kataria developed laughter yoga, which is a series of breathing and movement exercises designed to help teach the body to laugh without depending on jokes or humor. Now, there are laughter clubs all over the world. A laughter club is a place where people get together and afterwards they feel refreshed and invigorated. There are also drama programs that people might want to participate in, and it goes from learning basic performing techniques to musical theater to improv or storytelling. There are many, many benefits to drama. Drama, some of them include improved self-confidence, improved imagination, increasing capacity for empathy, developing skills in cooperation, collaboration, improved concentration and communication skills, and it can also be an emotional outlet because it allows for the expression of emotion. Drama also helps with self-discipline because it involves the process of moving from ideas to actions. It helps with memory because it involves rehearsing or performing words, which helps strengthen the skill like a muscle. And I want to introduce you to two new resources that will be provided in the near future at VITA. VITA is going to be providing two types of educational programs for individuals with developmental disabilities. This first one is called Abuse Prevention Training. The intent of the training is to educate individuals on their rights, identify forms of abuse and how to report it. It plans to teach how to recognize the difference between abuse and unacceptable behavior. The major goal of the workshop is to teach individuals to have a voice and to be heard, and that saying no is okay. One tool used in this workshop will be no rap. Even shy individuals will come out of their shelves and scream no. There are a number of questions that they ask during no rap. For example, an instructor might ask, what if somebody asks you to get into a car? Or what if someone tells you to give them all your money? The individuals in the group would respond by yelling no. It's fun and it's a good learning tool that helps show individuals in the workshop that there are many situations where saying or yelling no is very appropriate. The other educational opportunity that's going to be provided is relationship training. And it's a program that's based on life facts and flash curriculum. It's a very comprehensive program that will be flexible and in meeting individual needs. The curriculum will consist of a number of different social skills and sexual health, including self-esteem, decision-making, truth and honesty, types of touch and exploitation, how to say no, different types of relationships, dating, sexual thoughts and feelings, responsible relationships, public and private, and be careful places. Clothing, behaviors, body parts, sexual orientation, sexual intercourse, illegal and dangerous sexual behaviors, birth control, pregnancy, and sexually transmitted diseases. The topics are going to be taught using a variety of methods, role plays, group activities, and activity sheets and lecture. There's going to be different teaching methods, role plays, etc. So if one-to-one work is better for someone, that will also be provided. Costs for the workshop for these workshops haven't been finalized, but we're looking at the ballpark of $100 to $250 per person, and the programs are likely going to be running about 10 weeks. Another area of the framework is spiritual becoming. This might include community church activities, Bible study, choirs, or working at church events. In my research, I found that there's an organization that's called Multi-Faith Inclusion Network. And what it is, it's a committee that's dedicated to promoting inclusion for individuals with developmental disabilities and their families in their faith communities. They work with synagogues, churches, mosques, and temples. And they work to sensitize congregants and their leaders, as well as other community members, about the needs of individuals with developmental disabilities, as well as the gifts that they bring. And if you want more information about that, you can find it on the DSTO website under resources. Another area that Quality of Life Framework looks at is social belonging and community belonging. It's an area where people are connected to their community. And this can be achieved in a variety of ways. By finding employment, either paid or volunteer work might be one way. So funding can be used to be paying for a job or job coach, or job support. There are other ways of also connecting to community. Through social clubs, it could be through mutual interest groups like Cancer Society, the MS Society, or joining book clubs, library events, movie discussion nights, or participating in continued learning opportunities through the Toronto District School Board, or even just attending summer music street festivals. A trend that I'm seeing a lot of now in York Region is that there is a start of a lot of parent-run programs. Many parents are now starting to get together and pool their money to try and build new opportunities for their children. Parents are sharing workers and they're saving on costs in order so that they can get more for their money. Some of the other areas of the framework include practical becoming, leisure, and growth becoming. Leisure, really, it covers activities that are fun and relaxing. They might include hobbies like photography, stamp collecting, or bird watching. The area of growth becoming is one that I think is often compromised when our children become adults. It's been very well proven that adults with developmental disability, including those who have the most severe and profound disabilities, can still learn. Learning new skills is very, very empowering. The number or kinds of skills individuals learn will vary from person to person, depending on what their ability is and maybe even their medical condition. But each skill that is taught should have a written plan that provides guidance to the worker who is implementing it, along with an objective that will describe what the outcome and what the level of performance is expected. The plan should also specify the type of instructions that are to be given and the materials that are required, along with a schedule, how many times a week that the instruction should occur. The plan needs to include positive reinforcement and specific procedures for providing assistance or prompting. But the plan also needs to be reviewed and it needs to be modified on a regular basis. For all of this to work, there needs to be a lifelong process of building self-reliance. And what that means is, at home, there needs to be some expectations and there should be some matching of chores to abilities. What it means is you're creating opportunities for choices for people to make. As parents and as support people in the lives of persons with developmental disabilities, we need to be conscious of creating a space for individuals to make decisions for themselves as much as possible. So the best way we can do that is to try and create and open up as many options as we can so that an individual can choose from them. The research that U of T did, what they found was a variety of points. You'll see people that have a greater chance of having a higher quality of life. You'll see that they are people who can communicate more effectively, that have developed a higher functional ability, who have some form of occupational activity, who enjoy leisure activities in the community, who have access to the community, and they've developed some degree of independence. They have opportunities presented to them from which they can choose or decide. They have practical support from people, and they have emotional support from people. In summary, I just wanted to say that creative planning involves building on people's strengths. And creative planning needs to make sense for the individual, so it should be person-centered. And it requires that we try something new.